Welcome, Spartans, to Mission Debrief. We're playing every mission in the mainline Halo video game series in chronological order, discussing our experiences and sprinkling in a little lore along the way. If you'd like to play along and have your thoughts read on the show, email us at podcastevolved@gmail.com or drop us a tweet at podcastevolved on Twitter. We'll be playing the Uprising mission on the next episode. This episode, we're debriefing Gravemind from Halo 2. I'm your host, Colin Perkins, alongside David Arnold.
Hello, everybody.
And Krista Brown.
Feed me, Seymour.
The last mission... that was good. The last mission, the Arbiter continued his trek towards tracking down the index located in the library of Delta Halo. Thel forces his way through countless flood aboard a bevy of vehicles and a few super fun gondola rides. While Keyes and Johnson get to the index first, the Covenant cronies swipe it and take the two humans back to High Charity. This mission, we finally come face to face with the Gravemind, the all-knowing... The all-knowing abomination gives Master Chief and the Arbiter a pep talk in an attempt to get everyone on the same page. Stop Truth from using the index to fire Installation 05. Chief is sent to High Charity via portal in order to track down the Zealot while the Covenant starts to sort out their schism. The date of the game is November 3rd, 2552. This cutscene is crazy. What is this thing?
This is amazing. My favorite cutscene in almost all of Halo, I think. Like, especially, probably out of this game, it's my favorite cutscene.
Did you flip back and forth between the old graphics and the new?
No, just because they're out of sync.
Yeah. They're kind of in sync, but not... Yeah, I didn't want to miss too much of it. I did flip back at one point, and it's jarring how different the Gravemind looks. It's ridiculous.
They put all of the money into this Gravemind, right. And it is beautiful.
I think in terms of like the cutscenes, this is the one that I think has the biggest kind of improvement. I think it's amazing.
Uh huh.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely. For
sure. Yeah, if you flip back and forth, it's hard to tell. I mean, you can see what the Gravemind is to a degree on the old graphics, but I think the way they did it makes it feel so much, I don't know, bigger. It just in this giant dark room, and that wasn't necessarily conveyed as well in the old cutscene. Chris, why don't you take us through this, and then our community question is about this cutscene specifically, so we'll just kind of cover off on all our thoughts and go from there.
Okay, I guess we should start with just a little background on this entity, just because it's the first time we've ever seen it. So we all know Flood.
We've talked proto-Gravemind before.
Yeah, we've talked proto-Gravemind, which was what Keyes was in his big ball of humans. So, basically the life cycle of a Gravemind is the Flood find a host, the Flood spread as much as possible, they build up as much biomass as possible, and then they start gathering biomass and basically putting it together, which is kind of that's the point where we saw Keyes, where they were just collecting biomass into this big blob. Eventually, once the biomass goes to, it's like critical mass, it becomes what we see here. It becomes a Gravemind. And the reason the Flood want to do this is because without a Gravemind, the only instinct the Flood have is to collect. Once the Gravemind comes into the picture, they become immensely more coordinated. They become about 1,000 times more dangerous than they were because they have a leader. Mm-hmm. So, basically, every time a Flood infects a person, it gains whatever knowledge that person had. So, as the Flood collects, it's also collecting knowledge from every single being that it assimilates. Once the Gravemind is made, the Gravemind has all of that information, but the Gravemind is always the same. The Gravemind is the Gravemind is the Gravemind is the Gravemind. He's always the same character.
That's because the Flood are kind of eternal, right?
Yes.
Like, there's always at least, until the Flood are eradicated, there's always at least one Flood still around.
As long as there is one Flood spore, the Gravemind can come back.
Right. And all of the knowledge that was gained will then be retained, I guess. Or yeah, right.
So every Gravemind is the same entity. So it remembers... to the beginning of time, to when the first Flood spore infected the first being. It remembers everything. So this being is almost omnipresent. Because it has so much knowledge, it can basically...
Omnipotent. It's omnipotent and omnipresent almost at the same time.
Yeah, it's basically a god.
Right.
It knows... It has so much information in it that it can basically predict what's going to happen next almost to, like, the most minute detail.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has all this knowledge. It doesn't know what the future holds, but it's able to predict what the future holds. It's like the crazy, like, death supercomputer.
Right. Yeah.
So...
But it's organic. It's all organic.
Mm-hmm. It's all mm-hmm. organic. It can be destroyed, and it can be remade. It's not completely... So some things we don't know about the Gravemind is, if there are multiple Gravemind, are they just the same being working in tandem? That's what a mm-hmm. lot of people are thinking. Because multiple Gravemind can exist at once. So mm-hmm. what people are thinking is it's just two beings existing at once. They still share the same mind.
Yeah.
You can just kind of go back and forth. So that is what we are talking to right now. And he has collected both Master Chief and Theo mm-hmm. Vidom.
And he's got droopy lips and teeth for some reason.
And he looks amazing. Super scary.
Yeah, he has to talk.
Well, the Gravemind can kind of form into whatever he wants.
Yes.
Like, is that right?
Yeah,
it's just
can
a
kind
big,
of
big thing of biomass. I'm sure there are limits to it, but it's just a big chunk of blob. So he can right. kind of go into whatever form he wants. And one of the forms he wants is a kind of a big tentacle thing with even more tentacles that extend across the entire ring. Let's just get this straight. He picked up Master Chief, who was like a pelican's flight away from where the Gravemind is. So the Gravemind actually is at the bottom of the library in a huge chamber. That's where mm-hmm. we are in the Halo. We're just
That's
at the bottom
point.
Of the library. So his tentacles extend throughout the Halo ring and past the containment zone, which is crazy. But
That's a long tentacle.
So let's just get into this cutscene. I mean, the first thing it says is probably one of my favorite things in Halo is, "I am a monument to all your sins."
Mm-hmm.
Which is a hearkening back to kind of the origins of the Flood, which I won't get into. If you want to know more about the origins of the Flood, please read the Forerunner series.
Yes.
And I think we talked about the origins of the Flood in a long, long, long ago episode of the main show.
We did.
But
go check our website. Google it. It's awesome.
But in this cutscene, he's almost kind of sad in this cutscene. He's almost solemn and reminiscent. He always speaks in poetry. Which, in some of the extended lore, he kind of explains that he has so many poets that he has assimilated that is just how he speaks now.
He just got mad rhymes.
Yeah, he's just got the mad rhymes, bro.
Mad beats.
He doesn't want to, like, explicitly say things. He likes a little finesse.
I think it adds something to the character, though, that, like, he's speaking
it does.
In rhymes and stuff like that. And it's just, even just the one of, like, this one is... metal and flesh, and it has his mind concluded. This one is just flesh and faith, but is the more diluted. I love that there's the dichotomy between Chief and Arbiter, which, funny side note, this is the only time they talk in the whole game. The only interaction between Chief and Arbiter is this one cutscene.
Yep.
They never see each other after that.
Oh, yeah, good point. So before we go on, sorry, I just had a mental image of the Gravemind with a do-rag on, and he's got some turntables in front of him, and those little droopy tentacle things on his lips are actually spinning. Come on.
What?
Come on, that's good.
That's not canon.
That's not canon at all.
Somebody do that. Somebody make that. Okay, continue.
But as David was saying, he examines both Master Chief and Theo Vidom, also obviously seeing them as assets. And, you know, Vidom's like, "Hey, mm-hmm. bro, leave me alone. I don't want you to talk to me." And Gravemind's
but
like,
Theo holds true though. Like he holds to his what he knows of as, you know, what his task is.
Yeah.
So Chief says in the cutscene, he's like, you know, this guy's probably right, and Theo doesn't believe him even as the cutscene ends.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like he believes that the firing of the Halo is actually a bad thing.
Yeah, that's later.
Right.
But, you know, Gravemind's just, "There is much talk. I've listened through rock and metal in time." I love the stuff he says.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, he's exclaiming that he has been sitting on the sidelines waiting for all of this to come to Delta Halo for him to put his plan into action. And now it's his time to go on. But then we get introduced to 2401 Penitent Tangent.
Yes.
And the Prophet of Regret. So the Gravemind is actually assimilated Penitent Tangent, which is something Graveminds can do. They can actually corrupt artificial intelligences and bring them over to their side. He's done that many, many times before in the Forerunner Flood War.
Mm-hmm.
So he has corrupted the Monitor, or at least captured the Monitor.
And part of the way that he can do that is because he's so smart, right?
Like, yes. To your point. He uses logic. He uses logic to take over AIs, basically, right, and turn them to his side.
Right.
But, it's called the logic plague.
Penitent Minister, it's not completely turned over because it's still trying to activate the Halo. It understands what its job is and still wants to do that. So, right. Which I think is, because I was going to ask, how does the Gravemind have access to the teleportation network? And I imagine
people are saying that it is because he has Penitent Tangent.
Yeah, but then, yeah, I guess so.
So, you know, all the Prophet of Regret is also there, so they have a little spit, and the Gravemind just kind of sits and watches. You know, the Prophet of Regret says the Oracles are useless, they know nothing of the Great Journey, and Penitent Tangent says, well, you know nothing about protocols, and you know actually what this ring actually is, you dum-dum. And the Gravemind starts to explain, you know, this one's containment and this one's Great Journey are the same thing. The Great Journey is containment of the Flood. Then, you know, Gravemind sets his sights on Vadom and says, you are being promised a doomed existence. There is nothing good about this ring. Those who came before us did this to destroy everything. Don't let your kind do what they did before you. Don't let them kill everyone. And Master Chief's even like, yo, this dude's right. And Vadom's like, nah, man.
Maybe we've talked about it, but the prophets, are they mistranslating what the Forerunners wanted to do with the rings? Is that where their Great Journey came from?
Some of it is based on... Yeah, they created their own faith, and then, like, they're twisting what they see to fit in to their own narrative. So, like, I think the three hierarchs, like, I think it's in Harvest where they actually meet with, it's not Medic and Bias. Who's inside the Dreadnought?
Medic and Bias.
And then he tells them exactly what Halo is and does, and they're completely shaken by this information, and I don't know if they refuse to believe it or if they just decide to twist it.
It's more of they're so deep into this religion and controlling all of these species that they just keep going with it. They know at some level they know what Halo does, but at this point they have so much power, so much influence that they keep going.
But they must also, I don't know, acknowledge that they are going to end their life, their existence, because I think they've talked about ascending, right?
So yeah, but they still believe they're getting an ascension.
And so maybe they're of the mind that there's a divide between spirit and self or whatever, you know.
I honestly think truth more than anyone else knows. I think Truth is the big bad guy. Like, Regret and Mercy were just kind of going along with him, and I think Truth is the one who really gets tangled up in the lies and knows what's going on. And I think Regret and Mercy are actually still very devout to the religion.
But Truth must be, too, because he still wants to fire the Array. So
yeah, but he also has... A little later, we see some kind of, like, self-preservation, I think.
Yeah, okay.
But that's way in the future.
Sure.
Where were we? You know, Gravemind says, we have to find the key. They have taken the key. They've taken the index. We have to stop them from firing the ring. And he says to both Chief and Vadom, you know, you guys will search where the key is supposed to be. And also he puts in that, you know, if you don't believe me about the Halo, I will show you. So what this is he basically transports Vadom, which we see a little later, to a point where he will see that he is wrong, and then he transports Master Chief where the key is. Because right after this cutscene, after he teleports our two heroes away, we go straight to High Charity, and the Prophet of Truth is like, we have our thingy, and no one will take it from us. And then Chief just pops in, he's like, hey, guys.
Yep.
I love that.
Boo. That's a great, yeah, great start. Boo. Yeah. And then you start, then you grab a needler and go at it. But before we get into the actual rest of the mission, let's just cover off on the community thoughts. Well, actually, let's talk about, let's us finish our conversation, then we'll talk about community. Anything else to add, David, about this cutscene that you just want to chat? Like, it's just, it's
amazing.
It's jarring, right? You know?
Yeah, in terms of the game, it totally came out of nowhere, because I remember they're originally playing Halo 2, and the tentacle that came up and grabbed Chief, I was like, what the hell was that?
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of missions later, cut to this crazy-ass pet shop horror creature thing trying to talk to you, and it's like in rhymes, and it was like, what the hell was happening? It was quite confusing at the time.
Well, I think it also shows the difference between Halo CE and Halo 2, as they went way deep story-wise. And
yeah, they
about
went
that.
Hard into the lore.
Really hard.
The amount of stuff they cut out that you heard about afterwards would have been cool, like all the kind of Covenant history stuff that they had put into the game and had cut out. But even just having this, but I think it is important and good to see the enemy in terms of, like, actually know that there is an entity, some kind of identifiable thing that you're fighting against. Do you know what I mean? Because it's always the Hierarch / Covenants that you're actively working against. That shifts after this mission, where like the Great Schism happens, and then you have the Flood, and we'll talk about it later, but like a brief kind of alliance that kind of spawns, which is like really weird. But it's good to have the Flood isn't just a mindless thing, that there is an objective. Do you know what I mean? That it is an intelligence to it.
Right. Yeah, yeah, it helps kind of justify their existence. Yeah.
So I really
look
at it
more.
Yeah, I really like that. It sets up the Flood to be way more interesting as well.
Right.
And the Flood was already interesting to begin with, but the Gravemind just brings the Flood to a completely different level.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the stuff, again, at the release of the game, I think Bungie knew more about, you know, the stuff that we know now, and a lot of the stuff that we've just talked about. Some of that stuff wasn't known at the time either, and that's kind of been rolled out over the last decade plus. Do you guys think that? So we've played. You know, if you're playing with us, we played Reach, we played CE, we played Halo 2. Do you think Halo 2 would be a good jumping on point to the series because it's so lore heavy?
I think that.
No.
I think that Halo 2 is a hit over the head with lore, and I think you need Halo, at least Halo CE under your belt to kind of know the basics, and then once they start introducing like the multitude of lore that Halo 2 introduces, then you kind of stuff starts to click.
Yeah,
I think you just need a basic knowledge of the series, though.
Yeah, and I think Halo CE, as simple as that main story campaign is, and as limited to the characters it has, each one of them is important. So like you need to know the human Covenant relationship before you come into this game. You need to know your past experiences with the ring, with monitors. You need to all the stuff with the index. You need to know who Keyes is.
Yeah.
Johnson is the only one that really became a character in this game, as opposed to coming from CE. But I think
Cortana as well. Cortana's really
Cortana
important.
In a big way. Sorry, yeah, absolutely. And you need that relationships to really kind of care about what's going to happen. And the ending of this game wouldn't be as impactful if you didn't have CE to build upon the story of this
game. Yeah.
I wouldn't jump on Halo 2.
To enjoy the game as intended with the great gameplay and the deep lore, to your point. I think this, I would imagine Halo 2, because a lot of people just, you know, play through the campaign once and then just go run to multiplayer. I'm sure there's a big portion of people that are just skipping all the cutscenes or just playing with friends and they're not really paying attention to everything. I feel like Halo 2 would be kind of that dividing line where like, oh, I'm actually interested in what's going on here, or this is way too complicated, I don't care, just let me shoot aliens, right?
Definitely, definitely. Yeah. Well, in Halo 2, like, Halo 2 is the way that it is because of the games that come after this. You have to have all of these characters and all of this knowledge for the series to kind of build up to its kind of, not conclusion, but, you know, just the big brevity that Halo 3 is.
Mm-hmm.
It has to crescendo to that. So you have to have this base knowledge in order for Halo 3 to be what Halo 3 is later on.
Yep. Totally agree. Anything else on that? Well, I guess we're done with the cutscene. Anything else to add overall, Krista, before we move on to community thoughts on the cutscene?
I just love this cutscene. I can watch it all day.
I did watch it again. Like, I watched it a couple times. It's like, oof. It's just, yeah, it's very good.
Well, you can, if we really wanted to, we could pick apart every single line he has, but that would be like an hour long show.
Right. All right. Let's get community thoughts real quick, David, and then we will continue on.
We will. Colin Perkins posted in the Facebook group, "What's the best thing about the Blur Enhanced Gravemind cutscene in H2A? Question mark. So, couple of responses from that. We got Timothy Chaplick. The resemblance of the Halo 4 Happy Flood with the 2H2A Gravemind, as this Gravemind smiles like his Halo 4 combat counterparts. Seriously can't beat that grin. On the side note as well, the joke of wanting to jam cookies in its mouth also adds to this. Thanks, Xbox Live user Katzen." That's an inside joke, obviously. Good stuff, guys.
It's funny, though, that he says that there's a grin, but then, Chris, I think you commented where he almost feels sad in this. So.
I didn't get the sadness of him. I think just maybe
it's
just
like
melancholic.
Somber, maybe?
Sure.
Especially, like, we have played all the games, so we kind of know what his character builds to. Mm-hmm. So, like, this Gravemind is very somber compared to what we see later.
Mm-hmm.
True. Miles Dill. This is one of the designs I think the remaster thoroughly misunderstood and ruined. Boo, Miles, looks nothing like the original art, the original or the concept art, less imposing. I disagree. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah, I think we found, you know, we love Miles. He's very artistic and very insightful on the Halo art, but he really appreciates the old style. So I think a lot of the new stuff, he just
I haven't seen any of the concept art, so I don't really know what they're basing it off. I just think that what they took from Halo 2 to what they made in the anniversary, I'm like, holy shit. If this is what it was supposed to look like, it totally gives me the creepy, wet, disgusting vibe.
Oof, kinda, wet.
It's totally freaky. Like,
moist.
Moist.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So that's just what that gets me. Chris Hagen says he loves the new design. The old one reminded me of Audrey 2 from Little Shop of Horrors. Yeah. And I could hardly take it serious. Something Bungie even jokes about a lot. Even 343i did Halo 2.5 with a grunt Easter egg.
Let's look at that.
Aaron Campbell, we know him, says, yes. The original has a Little Shop of Horrors vibe. The remake is much more meaty and bloody. It feels like an assembled being. Yeah, that's kind of what I like about it too.
Mm-hmm.
And then going into our Discord group, we have some responses about the same thing. And Ellison94 says the Gravemind is actually scary. Yeah, totally. Hello Fannin says the red in his mouth reminds me a lot of that ketchup. Okay. And Matt said he looks like Audrey 2. Again, same thing. Jorko2 says the Gravemind looks much more defined. Comes across as more of an unnatural, terrifying abomination than a big plant-like monster. With the original lighting, the scale of the vast room, it makes it feel much bigger. Since they can't really define or compare it to something similar in the universe, it makes more intimidating a character. That's excellent and well-worded. So, there we go.
Very nice. All right, let's move on. So Chief pops into High Charity, and I can't imagine, like, obviously Chief's a super soldier, but he just gets dumped into the middle of High Charity and is like, okay, here you go. Go find the index. Just him.
It's pretty crazy. Insane, considering that, like, he is literally in the heart of hearts of High Charity in front of the hierarchs in the council chambers. I mean, that's just, like,
honestly,
so simple a thing, you know, just how he ended up there.
Yeah. Honestly, as I was playing this, I'm like, Chief couldn't have done this if the schism wasn't going on.
Right.
Like, that is the thing that really saves him throughout this whole mission.
Yeah, totally. Totally agree. Totally. Absolutely, agree. Yeah.
Also, brutes.
Yeah, lots of brutes.
And
holy
a lot
cow.
Of new weapons, too. For this late in the game, it's really interesting for a new enemy and a new weapon to be introduced.
It's so weird, yeah, because I read that, and I had to stop and think about it. I'm like, have we not faced the brutes in this game yet? Nope. And I was like, we haven't, and that's so strange to me.
Because, yeah, like, even Cortana, like, gives you a tutorial on how to fight them.
Yeah, and she calls them out, watch out, they're berserking, which is one of the mechanics I hate. In this game,
it's really annoying, and I'm glad we don't really see that again.
No,
not in the same way, at least.
No, it's awful. I don't like it at all. But
yeah, we fought brutes in Reach, but this is the first time in since then. So
yeah, that's
crazy.
True.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And also kind of an interesting kind of side part. This is the last level where we kind of fight against elites as enemies, because after this level, they're allies. for the rest of the game.
Yeah, I kind of struggled with that, right? Because there are some points where they're on your side, aren't there? Or are you always fighting against elites?
They're never on your side, but there is three-way fights.
Where they'll
ignore you and put the brutes... They'll focus on the brutes more than you most of the time.
Yeah.
But if you do nothing, they will eventually turn and fight you. Like, do you know what I mean? You're not gonna get you're not getting a free pass from the elites.
Right. Yeah, yeah. So the brute plasma rifle shows up here. Does it show up right away? I noticed it later in the mission. I didn't notice it right away.
Yeah, it's right away.
It's pretty much right after the chamber part, mm-hmm. right? Or do some of the brutes have them?
Some of the brutes in the chamber will spawn in. Different difficulties. You get more waves of enemies and stuff. So, but it's cool. It overheats super fast.
Well, really the strengths of the brute plasma rifle is that it fires crazy fast. It has a bit of a higher damage, but it overheats really fast. Is it lower
faster,
damage?
It's faster, but lower damage.
Okay.
So you have to be more precise, I guess,
the best way to use it is to dual wield it, because you use one, it overheats, you use the other, and then you just keep going back and forth. Because I did that, like, pretty much half of the time I was doing that for fun.
Yeah.
Because it's red and it's super cool.
Yes, that is cool. So have you ever dual wield both of them? The red one and the purple one?
No, just because the fire rate's different and it kind of throws me off.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like dual wielding two different weapons because it's just kind of weird to find a good rhythm with them since they fire differently.
Mm-hmm. So were you using, to clear this initial room, right, you have a needle rifle. A needle rifle is kind of hard, especially with the brutes charging you a lot. You know, they'll blow up in front of you.
Oh, I pink misted it.
Oh, did you?
I pink misted, like, this first section. Yeah, it was great.
Okay.
Pink flamethrowers.
I did the exact same. Pink mist all the way with carabine for headshots.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think I did some of the plasma rifles most of the time, but then also mixed in some of the needlers. But it's pretty chaotic, this first part. I found myself kind of hiding in the corners quite a bit, kind of going off into the sides. I do like here, once you clear out this room, how you pop Cortana essentially into the network of High Charity, right?
And that actually becomes a big plot point later. No spoilers, but...
Yeah.
Keep that in mind that she's in High Charity. She's not with you anymore.
Yeah.
And I like how it's kind of accented by, if you walk away from her hologram, her voice gets farther away, more distant. Mm-hmm. So, like, she's not with you. You left her.
She's not in your head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So from here, I'll do my best to kind of walk through this. You know, we've just played this, but you're essentially trying to get to the index or get to truth throughout this entire mission.
You're chasing him.
Yep, and this mission is long. It's a long mission.
I was surprised because some of these Halo 2 missions are like 15 minutes, but I spent an hour before the show doing this. I'm like, we're starting in 10 minutes and I'm not done yet, guys. I'm not sure what's going on.
Yeah. Well, there's lots of light bridges along the way and grav lifts and lots of different environments. There's just
really cool mission, though. It's really cool to be on High
Charity. It's beautiful.
Like, High Charity is gorgeous. High Charity is so good. Have we talked about High Charity a lot?
We talked about it last time, I think.
We touched on it briefly in terms of, like, what it is. You know, it's the dreadnought plus half a planet in space that's been, like, it's just, like, a mobile capital to this empire. As it moves.
The new graphics do it so much justice, too. You can see the entire city.
It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. The big skyscrapers to, like, the suburban outskirts.
Yeah, there's some cool information in Halo Warfleet, if anyone ever picks up that book. It has, just in terms of the scale of what we're talking about, the size of High Charity is just so cool. I think it's amazing.
So, for some reason, I had in my head, and I haven't seen High Charity in a while. I haven't looked it up, but it's enclosed, like the dreadnought's inside of High Charity, and there's like a big dome around it. Is that right? For some reason I had thought that the dreadnought was like popping out the top of it, but that's
no, they like built a dome around the dreadnought.
And there's multiple times where you can see that in the distance, and it's very cool.
Also, did you guys see the birds? There are birds in there. Why are there birds?
I don't know, but they're the same. Apparently, they're the same birds we talked about before. The quad wings are just skinned white, but they're exactly the same. You can shoot them and kill them, and they pop and everything. Same effect as before on Delta Halo.
Okay. Yeah, there's a couple of different, like, kind of aviary sections. That's what I call them, because you can hear the birds flying around or chirping in there. Well, let's continue on here. So we're chasing down Truth, who has the index, and we're just kind of going through this purple, gorgeous city, I guess, this giant... we've been on Covenant ships before, so we've gotten some of the purpley action, right? The purple aesthetic. But really here, you get the sense of how big it is also, and going through all these doors and all these chambers and different rooms and grav lifts and all that. So we kind of continue that on, and I really like how they... We talked about the schism is happening. The schism kind of unfolds throughout the mission, right? You mm-hmm. start out, and you don't see a lot of infighting, and then eventually you kind of get to a couple rooms where you see some dead Covenant, and you're like, what's going on here? Why are they already dead? I didn't do that. And then it kind of gets more and more where, like, the rooms are kind of, jumbled or destroyed, and then you eventually get to the point where they're actually full-on fighting each other, and they don't really care about you. What do you guys think about the Brute Shot?
It's just a cool grenade launcher, basically.
I like it. Mm-hmm. I always use it.
Do you use it?
Yeah, I use it a lot in this match. Okay. It takes a little bit of getting used to get around kind of the bounce. It's only 4 shots in this game. I think right. there's more shots in the other games. I think mm-hmm. Halo 3 is the 5 shot. I can't remember. I think it goes up. It's got a low ammo count, but I love the big blade. Do you know, the melee is really satisfying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's pretty cool. I like it a lot.
It didn't do a ton of hurt on me, I feel like. Or maybe I just did a good... Because you can kind of see it coming, so I was able to avoid it. And then they have the Brutes. What's with the flag on their back?
That's just showing... that's basically showing the captains. Like, instead of the cool armor we get in later games, it's, like, just a flag.
Right.
Kind of like Japanese samurai kind of thing. See, it's like a little flag on their back. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just to signify that that's going to be a Brute Shot guy, more or less. And you can kind of see that in the distance. And again, I think they were probably playing... Originally, they were playing with lower-def graphics and whatnot, so they needed something to really signify that. That they're the captains and have that Brute Shot for you to deal with. Yeah, I guess as I'm thinking about this, like, there's a lot... It's just so much ground to cover, and... What do you guys think about kind of the grab? Like, you can see there's always like this big skybox in the background, and you're going through the rooms, room by room, you know, opening doors, kind of going around. There's actually, you know, it's a straight shot. It's less of a maze than what we've been used to the last couple of missions, but there are different paths to take. Like, you can kind of get up into the one room early on where it kind of like curves around. There's like the main path, but then you can also jump up onto the sides and go around as well. I thought that was well designed. Do you guys typically, David? Are you trying to clear out everybody and proceed, or is you kind of combo like running through certain parts of these levels?
I fought my whole way through this level, because it's been so long since I played it. Mm-hmm. I still managed to miss the terminal, even though I knew where it was. I still went looking for it and missed it. I don't know how I managed that.
You can kind of see it from a long ways away.
I know.
Yeah,
and I was like, I know where it is. I don't know why I didn't pick it up. And I went looking for it. I mean, it's over here. And I couldn't find it. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to bother with it. And it's turned around and left. And maybe I thought I was wrong. I doubted myself. I shouldn't have. but yeah, no, it's a little bit repetitive as you go through, in terms of like, as you said, it's a linear level. Mm-hmm. You have this brief period where you go and save some Marines. That was kind of interesting. I liked seeing the prison complex and stuff. That was cool.
Let's talk about that really quickly. So you're kind of going through these corridors, and I think there's some grav lifts leading up to that point. But then Cortana does chime in and say that she's located a couple Marines. And you enter this kind of big room. It's like I guess the room's stacked on top of each other, on top of itself.
Yeah, different floors.
Mm-hmm.
Like a brig.
It's like a hub.
Yeah. So that was kind of cool. I liked fighting on multiple levels like that. That was cool.
Well, and you can, like, fire down below, right? So
exactly.
You're kind of up top, shooting. And you see the Brutes running around down below.
It's also really cool with the sword, because you can kind of get up to different levels with the lunge.
Oh, yeah?
Right.
Because it's great. The lunge in this game is crazy.
It's mm-hmm. so cool, though. Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of weapons in this game as well. When I picked up the fuel rod. Had some fun with that.
I grabbed that a couple spots.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's pretty easy. You really need it for the hunters, because hunters are very difficult. because you've just got plasma grenades and plasma weapons. So, like, I mean, I dual wielded most of the stuff I could against them.
I tried using the sword, the plasma sword.
Oh no!
Or energy sword against them. It did not work very well.
No, they just do that, like, kind of turn. They turn around and just smash your face.
Yeah, exactly. I got a couple good shots in there, but not enough.
I have to say, I do love in games when they do, like, three-way fights. Like, I do like the fact that it's not just one versus the other, that it actually changes it up and you see the factions and you see the schism happen. I really enjoy watching the fights, see who plays out. I think on anything above kind of normal, I think the brutes always win. I just think they're too brutal in terms of, like, they physically impose themselves on the elites.
Right.
And I think just the weapon matchups are kind of, like, not evenly balanced. But for them, anyway, I guess. I mean, there's a certain case we get, like, the jetpack elites flying around the place as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. It's cool. It's fun.
The Marines are typical Marine. When you find them, it's cool. And you can grab some UNSC weapons.
And they instantly die no matter what you do.
Yeah,
no, there's no UNSC weapons.
There's not. Okay, there's not. I'm misremembering. But yeah, they're not super helpful. I think I had a couple hang around for a little while, but yeah, they didn't last very long.
Well, it's way too much for Marines. Like, no shields, no nothing. It's just, like, impossible. Right.
Yeah, you'd have to really take your time to kind of ferry them through with you. I'm trying to think of the other areas. So there's a couple parts where you get to, like, the long bridges, and that's where you usually start to see some fighting, and those are a little imposing because there's, like, a lot going on in this narrow little pathway where you got to get through. I mean, we're playing on normal, so it's not too difficult. But this mission's no joke on the higher difficulties.
Oh, no, sure. It's not. This one's really difficult. Like, you have to let them fight each other and then just pick off the rest.
Yep. There's no infinite spawns, though, I don't believe. So you should be fine to do that tactic where you just kind of sit and let them all kill each other. Because there's no flood in this mission, which is nice.
Very nice.
Yes. If you added flood to this mission, it would be brutal. And then, yeah, do we know what those, like, long, like, I don't know, like, energy bridges are? Are they just called energy bridges, maybe?
Yeah, I think they're literally just connecting different parts together. Yeah. Kind of like skyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love the kind of technology. Skyways. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. And I guess going on those makes the mission feel even longer because, you know, you're traveling all this way, going from, you know, through all these rooms and corridors, and then you also are doing these bridges and then also doing grav lifts up and down. So you're traveling a long distance.
I always thought I had that cool scene then, like, where you're on one of the bridges and then Amberclad shows up and Cortana's goes, Slipsis, and a big fucking spaceship just flies in and flies over you. I'm like, that's cool.
Do we know enough about that to talk about that? Is it being controlled by the Flood at this point?
Yes, it is.
And Cortana pretty much says that a few minutes later, that, like, the flood have been detected in Amberclad.
So they must have just parked it in the wrong spot.
Well, I'm pretty sure in Amberclad was what transported Johnson and Miranda to the library.
Yeah.
Which was already infested with Flood. Oh, so I'm sure all of the Marines died and the Flood took over the ship.
That makes sense.
Because the Gravemind wants to spread the Flood as far as possible. So it would make sense for him to go to High Charity, a giant spaceship. That is also
giant
full
space
of,
city.
It's also full of people who can't escape. There is not enough transports on High Charity for every living being to escape.
Side note, the story, I think it's Hunters in the Dark. Maybe it's not that one. What is the story that is all about Ratas and about Halfjaw? Oh, what book is that? Shadow of Intent. It's called short novel Justine. That starts where this begins. It starts on High Charity with the Flood infesting it, like the first couple of chapters. It's awesome. Yes.
It's really interesting.
It's all about the mass panic and just, like, you know, things that unfolded in terms of, like, when it's a mass city trying to, like, evacuate, and just the numbers are just too big. You know what I mean? They don't have enough ships to evacuate High Charity. It's not built for that. Mm-hmm. And it's just the Flood slowly, well, rapidly infesting. It's crazy.
And I'm sure the Gravemind knew High Charity was just a prison. Like, once the Flood get in there, it's a prison. It's a slaughter fest.
Yeah, that's nuts. That's weird to think about. Yeah, so they find their way up into the In Amber Clad. You see that? There is a lot going on in this mission.
There is. It's like a. It's basically like every all of the puzzle pieces are coming together in this mission.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. So I mentioned before that there's like these big outdoor open aviary areas that you get to where there's like you come in up top and then down below there's like I don't know some trees and stuff.
Alien trees.
Yeah, and that room's really big, and I think the first one that you get to is where the terminal is that we talked about, and then there also the skull is also in this one.
Oh.
And it's just kind of you kind of hop on the rocks and go up to there. There's like a catwalk area on the sides that you can kind of go all the way down one of them, and get the skull. The skull is the anger skull. Again, only on legendary when you can get that. When I went over to the area that it was supposed to be, I picked up a Chivo. There's like a Cortana toy.
Do you know about this? There are toys on every single mission of different Halo characters. They're collectibles just like the skulls.
Okay. But and I didn't see it. I must have just walked over it because it was super dark.
Yeah. They're pretty. Some of them are insane to get. It was really fun. I looked up a bunch of. I did them all at one stage. But you did? I looked up a bunch of walkthroughs and how to do them. Because a lot of them involved like going back to the old graphics and glitching up certain mountains that you should not be accessible. A ghost. There's some of them that are pretty insane. Like one of them is on like Delta Halo, and do you know where the Jackal snipers are right after you get like all the ODSTs drop in with the Warthog and stuff?
Yeah.
At the very start of the mission, you like get in a ghost and you go up the side of the mountain there, way into the distance, like way over under the side of the lake to find one of these little toys. Mm. It's crazy.
Oh wow!
But it's cool. It's a cool thing to do.
And they're just, are they just like little plushies? Is that kind of what
yeah,
they are?
Yeah, that's exactly what they are. They're just little plushies.
And they're all different like Halo characters ranging from, you know, Forerunner characters to Halo 5 characters.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, we've talked about, I don't know if we've talked about that much, but we're playing on Master Chief Collection. Master Chief Collection launched and was kind of broken, mainly from a multiplayer standpoint, you know, some with their actual, like, the co-op aspect of it, but they jammed a lot into this game. They spent a lot of time into it. It was a very ambitious game, as you can tell from like all these collectibles. And if you ever look at the achievement list for Master Chief Collection, it's giant.
Yeah.
Our resident achievement hunters, hunter primarily David, he still hadn't gotten all the achievements yet.
It makes me cry sometimes to think of the amount that are on it and how difficult some of them are. Like the Lasso ones, I don't think I'll ever get them.
Lasso is legendary, all skulls on. They are, you are playing like a 15-minute mission for 3 hours to get through it. It is so horribly difficult. I did Halo Reach and a lot of lassos in Halo Reach.
Mm-hmm.
But you really need to have a huge chunk of time and someone who is really good with you, just two really good players who know the levels inside out.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, there's lots of cool stuff in this game if you do want to wander around and you know, experience the whole thing. As I mentioned, the terminal is kind of off on the side in this big aviary room also, and we'll get to that at the end. And then we're just going to kind of continue to proceed through, you know, similar rooms, similar kind of ramps and grav lifts and all kind of a lot of the stuff that we've seen already. But as I mentioned at the beginning, you're seeing that schism unfold more and more throughout. So at the start, you don't really see Covenant fighting each other, and by the end, like they're full on just trying to destroy each other. Did you notice towards the end, I guess that big long mausoleum room. Do you guys want to cover off on anything before we get to the mausoleum room?
No,
I think we're ready to kind of wrap it up a little bit.
Okay. There are a bunch of hunters. So you go across this one bridge, a similar bridge to what we talked about earlier, where it's this narrow path, and then there's lots of fighting going on in between. There's like a turret in the middle, too. You get past everything up until the doors. The doors open, and then just a wave of Covenant just come at you. A couple hunters are included. Are the hunters on one side or the other? Did you guys notice if they're fighting for the Brutes or fighting for the Elites?
They're on
they all pick a side.
They're not all on one. It's not like all Grunts side with these guys and like all Jackals side with these. But yeah. I think they did say, especially in Halo, actually in the next mission, they mentioned that, these hunters, these pack brothers have aligned with us, Arbiter or whatever. So I think it's very hit and miss. I think it depends on the individual hunters.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in this mission, I've seen them fighting brutes.
Right. Yep. So this mausoleum room, if you've noticed, I don't know. David, do you want to talk us through this mausoleum area? It's kind of a cool. It took me a while until we talked pre-show. I didn't realize that this is where you got your armor.
Yeah, this is the Arbiter of the mausoleum of the Arbiter. So this is where all the Arbiters are stored. Essentially, when they die, their bodies get recovered and the armor is stored here in the kind of central chamber. So this is where the cool cutscene happened earlier in the game. We saw Arbiter get his armor. So you walk in here and Cortana comes on and says, "You may want to sit this one out, Chief." And it watches a whole bunch of brutes and a whole bunch of elites fighting in this room. You can sit back and let them fight. I think the elites might win this one because there's a few Honor Guard elites in here and elites with like fuel rods and stuff.
And the white elites that pull out swords.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you have some reinforcements coming and hunters are in the mix in here as well. The song Blow Me Away from Breaking Benjamin plays during this mission.
I always switch back to the old graphics to hear that song.
It's quite strange. So there's a remix or there's a different song that plays.
There's a whole different song just because some of the music rights are different.
Yeah. And whatnot. So it's a cool kind of fight in this big room. And when you kind of get through it, you kind of get to the end.
Let's talk about strategies here. Do you guys wait it out or what do you typically do?
I like to wait it out and let some of the numbers thin, and then most of the time I end up just taking out the trying to take out the fuel rod elite first. Then I just mop up whoever's at the end. And like when you try and leave, the hunters come in, and then some stealth elites try and come in, and then there's also a big honor guard elite charges you again with a sword. So you gotta keep you on your toes.
I think it took me a couple tries just because at this point I was just trying to run through the rest of the mission. And I did end up getting behind some of the elites, and so they were kind of firing to the middle of the room. I think it was the white elites on one of the sides, and they didn't see me or didn't care about me. And so you can, if you're behind them and they don't notice you, you can just kind of punch them and they'll die one shot. So I think I cleared out a couple of them and just kind of waited, to your point, just kind of waited for everyone else to thin each other out. I think I might have ended up towards the middle of the room at one point. I don't know why. Kind of where the armor, what do we call it, like the armor chamber or the armor, whatever that thing is in the middle, but yeah, I kind of skirt on the outside and maybe a little bit down below. Krista, how do you attack this mission?
I usually wait. I always go to the elite side because I want to take out the elites first because they pull out energy swords and it really bugs me. So I usually go over there and start kind of taking them out. Let them fight a little, of course, and then just start taking them out, and then kill the brutes, and then just throw millions of grenades at the hunters.
Yeah, because are there four hunters in here?
There are four, yeah.
And then some of the doors open, too, I think, on the sides. I do remember it. I didn't notice it as much for this playthrough on normal, but I know on Legendary, the doors open and let through some brutes at some point. It probably is on all difficulties. So, yeah, this room is no joke. No joke. You eventually do trigger Cortana to say, what does she say specifically? I'm trying to remember. She just kind of says that she opened a door, I think, and she tracked down where Truth is going. And so a door opens. David, you mentioned that's the same door where the elites come into the room. That's the door that you can actually leave. And then you kind of go across this big long bridge, and then that's where the mission finally ends. The long mission.
It's a really fun, good mission, but when you are in crunched for time, just always start the mission a little earlier. Don't play the mission an hour before you're supposed to talk about the mission.
right, yeah, definitely. Is this one, this would be a good co-op one, I feel like.
Oh yeah, it's a good
it's fun.
It's a good fighting one, like you just get to kill a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, no vehicles, but just lots of
you get a lot of cool weapons though.
But you get new weapons.
A lot of cool Covenant weapons, yeah.
Yeah, it makes up for that. You get to use pretty much all the Covenant weapons are on this map. So you can use every single one of them in the course of the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's snipers at 1.2, right?
Yep.
There's snipers, carbines, you name it, they got it. It's all here.
For your murderous pleasure.
All right, so let's do end cutscene real quick, and then we'll do terminal and get out of here. David, you want to do end cutscene?
Yeah, so the end cutscene pretty much just cuts to the Hyrax and Tartarus kind of getting ready to leave, and the flood kind of start to infest. This is where you see the little, what they call the infection forms, kind of flood up and try to attack the guys. We get all these brutes attacking and fighting the flood infection forms. They're like really slow and heavy, so like you can imagine a lot of them kind of get through. And one of them actually does manage to get past Tartarus and jumps on to Mercy. Mm-hmm. And pretty much like wraps his tentacles around. And Mercy's like the oldest of the Hyrax, so he's pretty frail. Mm-hmm. So he collapses on the ground. And then Truth pretty much stops Tartarus from helping him. Yeah. And be like, the great journey waits for no one, even you, brother. And turns around and leaves, just in a really cold...
That's so
cold. And
you can
see Tartarus even like hesitating and thinking about helping him.
Because they're like totally like, they're telling Tartarus like, oh, the faith of all these lives will rest in your hands, chieftain. So
do you think they could have saved Mercy at that point, though?
Oh, like, yeah, flood went around his neck. You just grab it and it pops in your hand. I think we see Chief do that at some point. It grabs an infection form off someone.
So the infection form, it's not like it bites you and then you're infected with the flood. Like
the infection form actually has to go into your body.
Oof.
If you look at some of the flood, you can see their red tentacles coming out of them.
Uh-huh.
That's the infection form in the host.
Yeah. Ugh. Fun times.
Yeah, they have like some kind of injector skin piercing thing, but I think it's in mm-hmm. them, so they have to kind of wrap their tentacles around you to get like the skin contact.
What it does is, I think it has to do with something with your spine. It injects something into your spine, which starts the flood process and starts, you know, making your body really weird, and then they're able to enter your body.
They go into weird, crazy ass descriptions of it in the flood book, where Jenkins isn't infected properly. So, and the infection form actually gets killed before completing the infection on him, but he still gets converted, and it's really gross, and like it's really sad. His story is just really sad, yeah, because where like he retains his consciousness while still being part of the flood.
Yeah, so like the flood consciousness is still talking to him and telling him to do things, but he's still himself.
Oh yeah, okay. I gotta reread that. That's good.
It's crazy scary.
That's the only good part about that book, honestly.
Yeah, and humanity like captures him and does experiments on him and stuff to try and learn what the fuck's going on. And I don't know, Oni has him at one stage. I don't know, it's pretty crazy. It's awful. But anyway, and then the mission kind of ends and that's it.
Yep. Yeah, that was pretty, I don't know, not eye-opening. We knew Truth was pretty evil, but that was super evil. I'm just like, oh yeah, he's, you know, we'll just move on.
Yeah, he's an asshole. Well, he just saw a way to eliminate his competition. Because as we talked about before, these prophets are always infighting. In a very political, like, totally backstabby politics, way. Because if you remember, Truth also let Mercy die. Or Regret die.
Yeah, kind of.
Well, he evacuated all the phantoms when the demon came in.
Oh,
he withdraws all the phantoms, because that's what the shipmaster says. If you had not withdrawn our phantoms, we could have saved him.
But didn't we talk about he withdrew the phantoms because he didn't want to kill Regret accidentally? But maybe, I guess it could be...
No, he kept reinforcements from going into the...
To go and help, yeah.
Because he doesn't want any of the prophets around.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Truth is an asshole. Hashtag Truth is an asshole.
All right. I think, is there anything else? I think there's usually have a little trivia, David. The one thing I forgot to mention is that Tartarus is also like throughout the mission. I think it's Tartarus. It's a brute.
It's a brute. I'm not sure if it's Tartarus
just,
or
like,
not.
Chimes in throughout and kind of is giving you a little bit of just information about what's going on.
He's basically telling you how chaotic it is.
Yeah. And then Truth, meanwhile, in the background of the mission is kind of trying to not convert. He's explaining to people, just preaching and saying, like the great journey is so and so, and like you can hear him talking to try to convince the Covenant to kind of join his side and fight against the Sangheili. Anything else, David, on the trivia side?
Not really. There's a few small things, but a lot of them I've kind of said already. This level has the largest number of hunters, with a total of 8, as you can expect. Well, it's the only level where John and Thel kind of interact with each other in terms of that cutscene. Mm-hmm. What is it? That's really it. There isn't really a whole lot else. I mean, it's the... Yeah, not as it kind of, guys. Do you know what I mean?
I have some trivia.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, let's hear it.
Krista Brown.
So... I kind of found this quite a while ago, so I'm kind of excited to talk about this. During one of the songs that plays during this this scene, and it also plays a little bit during the Arbiter scene where he becomes the Arbiter. It is a song called the Mausoleum Suite, and if you listen closely, there is a very low voice saying things backwards.
Oh,
so there are some secret backwards messages. So here's the message it says during the song. I have walked among men and angels for 3,000 years. Time has no end, no beginning, no purpose. I wander the earth seeking forgiveness for my horrible crimes against God and man. I live to see death and destruction, evil over the light, but the light cannot be extinguished. I live in a prison of my own demise. I am lost in time.
Medicant bias?
Yes, it is Medicant. Oh, it is not confirmed to be Medicant bias, but it is, like, it can only be Medicant bias.
Never heard of this before. It's awesome. Yeah,
so it's really cool. So some people have actually, like, gone through and, like, sped it up a little bit. If they speed it up a certain amount, it sounds like a prophet. If they speed it up even more, it sounds like a monitor. So basically the criteria in this poem is Medicant bias. And if you do not know who he is, he was a forerunner monitor, basically. He was like a super monitor, like a very, very galaxy-encompassing AI that actually turned against the forerunners to the Gravemind. And then because of that, he is split into multiple sections all around the galaxy. I think one's on Earth, one's on another installation, and one is on the Dreadnought. So it would make sense for us to only hear this when we are on High Charity. This song only plays when we're on High Charity. So
that's a deep layer of
it is so cool though. I love it because I love Medicant Bias. Even though we haven't seen him in anything, I still love him.
No, well, we're going to be talking about him for Halo 3.
We are.
Yeah, so I was going to say Halo 3.
You can look forward to that, Christopher.
I am so looking forward, because he's like my favorite, most underrated, forgotten character.
Well, yeah, I think the lore people like us know that he exists and his potential, but most Halo players don't know what's going on wouldn't know what Medicant Bias is. All right, let's do Terminal, and we will get out of here. This has been a long episode.
It's worth it, though. Okay, so this terminal is all about the Grunt Rebellion. So the Grunt Rebellion is basically when the Covenant found the Ungoi, or the Grunts, they immediately turned to slavery. They're like, we're not even going to talk to these people, we're just going to enslave them. So the Grunts were very oppressed. Because
they figured they could just take them over right away, right? They were small little creatures, they didn't think they had to worry about them.
Yes, yeah. So they found their homeworld of Balaho. I think that's how you say it.
Yep, that sounds right.
And they just persecuted and subjugated them to all of the slavery and just made them do horrible things, like they were used in battle, but they had no weapons and no armor.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, so eventually this came to a head when the Kigyar, who don't like the Grunts at all for whatever reason... They hate the Grunts the most. No one likes the Grunts, but Kigyar hate them the most. They attempted to poison the Grunts and make them infertile. And this kind of came to a head, and the Grunts rebelled on all of the Covenant. So they rebelled on their homeworld, and they rebelled in High Charity, which is one of the first times that High Charity has actually seen war on it. Because most of the time it's very peaceful. It's just the Covenant's place to brood and make evil decisions. But not wars. So, a bunch of stuff happened. An Arbiter rose up to conquer it, and eventually he decides to glass the homeworld and show all of the Grunts what he's doing to their homeworld. And eventually the Grunts say, "Okay, I surrender." and they don't kill the grunts, the elites.
We got the little grunt here, Krista.
I know, the little grunt, sad grunt.
Yeah.
Sad grunt, sad face. Yeah, it is really sad. But, so the Sangheili being the Sangheili actually see a lot of value in the grunts being able to rebel and being able to prove themselves in battle. So instead of just murdering all of the grunts for their horrible, horrible war that they caused, all of the rebellion, they decide to actually upgrade them and actually fight alongside them, which is why the grunts mm-hmm. we see now actually are armed. They are able to kind of move up in the world as well. They're able to become voices of the prophets as deacons. And they're just able to fight and not be enslaved. They still have the crap jobs, but they actually are able to work to non-crap jobs, but there's just not as many. The Grunt are still low on the totem pole, but they're actually on the totem pole now. What happened.
They earn the respect. Like you said, the elites, they earn respect from the elites or of the elites. And they're kind of their sidekicks throughout. Yep. Right? Usually when you see an elite, you see a couple Grunts too, which is kind of cool.
Which the elites don't necessarily like having grunts with them, but they see the value in them now.
Right, yeah. This cutscene, and I think that was this terminal, I think the last terminal was about the hunters.
Mm-hmm.
Those are both spoken of in the beginning, when the Arbiter becomes the Arbiter. They talk about the taming of the hunters
and the Grunt Rebellion.
The Grunt Rebellion. So that's kind of why they've fleshed these two specific events out in the terminals here.
Also because, you know, Arbiters were immediately responsible for them. Also, it's really, these are the two races that were hard for the Covenant to tame.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of the other races are like, hey, a great journey sounds awesome. I'm mm-hmm. going with you guys.
Right, exactly. Cool. Anything else before we get out of here? Oof, there's lots of stuff to talk about in this mission.
Holy I have cow. Talked and you have listened.
So this is the Krista episode, everybody, in case you didn't notice.
It's because I really like the Flood. I hate fighting the Flood, but I find them really interesting.
Mm-hmm. They are very interesting. Like we've said before, most important faction in Halo.
Yes, hands down.
All right, that will do it for our debriefing of Gravemind. From Halo 2. On the next episode, we'll be covering Uprising. Send us your thoughts at podcastevolved@gmail.com or drop us a tweet at podcastevolved on Twitter. Until next time, evolved.
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 Thank you for indulging me.